Good morning. Coming up to preach with a Bible and Richard Dawkins. Not sure what you think of that. So, Abraham and Isaac, it's a pretty well-known story, isn't it? It's familiar, I'm guessing, to most of us. And whether you've been in church for years and years and years, or perhaps you're quite new, I expect most of you have heard it before. It's a foundational story, isn't it, in Christianity and Judaism and Islam. And just now lots of Muslims are celebrating Eid al-Adha, and they're remembering this story as it's told in the Quran, and especially Abraham's obedience to God. Nice picture. There are lots of famous paintings like this one that have been made on the theme of the story. But what is it all about? What on earth is it really all about? We've had quite a few weeks looking at the story of Abraham at Christ Church, so I'm going to test you out. You know I like to do this. What do you think Abraham has learnt of God in those stories that we've been looking at in the last few weeks? So anyone like to suggest anything that he might have learnt so far? For instance, he's been told by God to leave his home. Anything else you can remember has happened that he's found out about God? God said he blessed him, be the father of a great nation. God has a plan for him, a promise, yeah, the covenant he's made. Trust, to leave his home, yeah, to trust God, he's got to trust. He's seen God's judgment. Oh, I'll give you the answers. He's seen God's judgment on some people and some places. He's worshipped God, he's built altars to him. He's said God is his shield and reward. And God has miraculously given him a son. This is what the writer of the book of Hebrews, says about this event that we've just been listening to as Sarah read. I think I've got this on a slide as well. Here we are. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promise was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. So, is the story all about Abraham's faith? Well, clearly it is about a man, isn't it, who trusted God in the most extreme of ways, a man who's commended in Scripture for his faith in God. And that's what religions teach, isn't it, like Christianity, Judaism, Islam, that we submit to what God tells us, and that's what we do to be good. Some people think that this story is teaching us not to sacrifice our children. Wake up, my child. You please? That's often the way it's presented in Jewish tradition. And we know that in the world of Abraham, about 4,000 years ago, there was child sacrifice going on. And both those interpretations have a lot of value and are worth exploring, but we're not going to look at either of those this morning. Because, hang on a minute, perhaps you're listening to that story, just perhaps, and you think, well, this doesn't sound like good behaviour to copy. Perhaps you're looking around and thinking, well, there's lots of nice religious people here this morning. They might all be thinking this is a good story about a good way to behave. But actually, I think this is a terrible way to behave. I think it's an example of awful behaviour by someone in the Bible. And if you're thinking that, you wouldn't be the only one, which is why I brought along Richard Dawkins. I'm going to read you an extract from The God Delusion, in which he critiques religion as a whole, really. He talks about holy books in one part, and he talks about Abraham, and he says, well, why do people say Abraham is great? He did loads of things that were terrible, like, you know, pretending his wife was his sister to save his own skin and doing that twice. He goes on, such unpleasant episodes in Abraham's story are mere peccadilloes compared with the infamous tale of the sacrificing of his son Isaac. God ordered Abraham to make a burnt offering of his longed-for son. Abraham built an altar, put firewood on it, trussed up Isaac on top of the wood. His murdering knife was already in his hand when an angel dramatically intervened with news of a last-minute change of plan. God was only joking, after all, tempting Abraham and testing his faith, says Dawkins. A modern moralist cannot help but wonder how a child could ever recover from such psychological trauma. By the standards of modern morality, this disgraceful story is an example simultaneously of child abuse, bullying in two asymmetric power relationships, and the first recorded use of the Nuremberg defence. I was only obeying orders. Does Dawkins have a point? There was a really tragic story in the news in the last week, and I don't know if you saw it, about a mother who murdered her two small children. I don't think she said this in her defence, but what if we read that in her defence she said that God had told her to do it, to sacrifice those children to him? I guess we'd say she was deranged, she was mad, she was evil. But although Abraham didn't actually kill Isaac and a replacement sacrifice was provided, isn't that what the Bible is saying Abraham was good to be willing to do? Isn't that what the Bible says to us? So it seems to me that the really big question about this story that we need to try to answer is, what kind of God is this? What kind of God is this? Is he a very angry sort of God who wants sacrifices? I mean, what sort of God commands a man to kill his son? What kind of God demands animals to be sacrificed to him anyway? Is death at the heart of his nature? I mean, we've talked about Abraham's faith, haven't we, and his trust, which was incredible. But I suppose the question is this the sort of God that Abraham was right to trust? So what I'd like to do briefly this morning is just to take a bit of a walk through this idea of sacrifice and to focus on what I think is this big question. What kind of God is this? Why would it be good to trust a God like this? Would it? So let's begin our walk through this then by taking ourselves back a bit to the time of Abraham. So we're going back about perhaps 4,000 years, about 1800 BC. And we know that most ancient peoples carried out rituals of sacrifice. I expect that's not news to you, not just in Jewish culture in the Bible, but all over the world. So what was the idea of sacrifice? Why did people sacrifice? What kind of gods did they think they were sacrificing to? I suppose pretty early on, cave people, I don't know, prehistoric people realised that if they were to be successful in hunting or later to be able to grow crops, that was all dependent on forces a bit outside their control, whether the sun shone and the rain fell. So something up there presumably was governing these forces, and we better keep on the right side of these forces. We better please them, we better appease them, we better give up something valuable. My crops have grown well, I'll give the gods a portion. I'll offer it up, literally up on a pile of stones or up on a mountain. And there's a big problem with this system of sacrifice, although it seems to have been carried out everywhere. And that if you keep sacrificing, this system spirals into a huge and terrible sort of vortex. Because these gods demand more and more. They're never satisfied. What if you made a sacrifice, like these people here, and then you had a really good harvest or the hunt went well? You must have pleased God. So do you offer the same amount again next time? Or should you offer a bit more? And what if things didn't go well? What if the hunt failed? What if the crops didn't grow? God must be offended. Perhaps you should offer more, definitely, that time. Something more valuable again. So you see this spirals into a huge, a terrible vortex if you're going to try and appease the gods. Because the trouble is, you never know where you stand, do you? Is God pleased or not? You keep trying to offer things of more and more value. Perhaps you start off with grain, and then something of more value, I suppose, would be animals. And what about, some of you know the stories about the prophets of Baal in the Old Testament, who cut themselves. Maybe your own blood would be a better offering. And what would be the most valuable offering? I guess that would be human sacrifice. And so we read in the book of Leviticus, for example, about the terrible god Molech that was worshipped by Israel's neighbours. This was a god who demanded the sacrifice of your firstborn child. A practice that was strongly denounced in the book of Leviticus, for example. Don't give your children to be sacrificed to Molech. And from this, what a reference here from Jeremiah as well, where God says, calls this an abomination. So within this culture, we find this story. Maybe that explains to us why Abraham doesn't question God. He doesn't argue with God, does he? He doesn't say why. He wasn't afraid to question God when we looked at the story of the destruction of Sodom. But he's living in a time when perhaps this is what the gods are seen to be like. They demand more and more and more of you. Of course, for Abraham, he's not required to kill Isaac in the end. He's forbidden from doing so. And what follows in the history of God's people is a whole system now of animal sacrifices that goes on for another 2,000 years or so. And it looks pretty barbaric to us, doesn't it, when we think about it? Seems barbaric to me. I find it difficult to take my cat to the vet to have her teeth done, and sacrificing sheep. But I think there's a good argument that this system was quite revolutionary in its day. Why? Because we saw the problem with sacrifices is you keep having to do more. You never know where you stand. There's no peace. But for the people of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, they have a system whereby they're invited to draw near to God, to give a defined sacrifice and find some peace with God. So you could argue it was quite a progressive system. The Bible is very clear it wasn't God who needed the sacrifice. That would be weird, wouldn't it, if God needed a sacrifice. So in Psalm 50 we read God saying, I have no need of a bull from your stall or goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine and the cattle on 1,000 hills. If I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you, for the world is mine and all that's in it. Do I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? It wasn't God who needed the sacrifice, no. The Bible explains to us that it was to meet our human need, and our need is to find peace with God and to know where we are with God and to trust in him. Take a bit of a whiz through history here. Eventually, a giant altar existed in a huge temple to God built on this very spot of our story, in what has now become the city of Jerusalem. In this, the last of several temples, we read there were 2.3 million stones. Can you imagine that? And thousands of priests organising the system, and there were lots of sacrifices going on. So in the spring festival of Passover, for example, 200,000 to 300,000 pilgrims would flock to Jerusalem, and the blood from their sacrifices drained off into the Kidron Valley. And along comes a Jewish rabbi called Jesus, who says that he is greater than the temple. He is more significant than this whole system itself. Like the temple, he is God's dwelling place. Jesus, who gives a theatrical lesson in the temple by throwing the tables over. I myself am the dwelling place of God. God lives in me. If you're looking for God, look at me. What a danger he was to the system. Well, you might be thinking, that's 10 minutes of my life that won't come back. What's that got to do with me sitting here in Yule in 2019? You know, those people, weird people from years ago, killing animals, and it's got nothing to do with us, has it? Worshipping angry gods with all these sacrifices? Or could it be the case that actually in British society today there are people who need peace, just can't find peace? People who are burnt out just trying to be good enough. people who cut themselves to bring some kind of healing. People who don't know how to deal with guilt and their shame. People who carry their anxieties and guilt as a burden. I'd suggest there are lots of people like that. I suggest that we know people like that. I suggest that maybe even you and I might be people like that. And maybe those same old angry gods that we were perhaps smiling at a few minutes ago just exist under different names today. Those angry gods who aren't satisfied. Now, the first Christians understood very, very well that the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, in that something incredible had happened that would affect all humanity, for all people in all times and all places. And the writer to the book of Hebrews says this: "But he, Jesus, has appeared once for all at the culmination of the ages," like that phrase, "to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself." And that was the message, the testimony of those first followers of Jesus. He has appeared at the culmination of the ages to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself. God himself become the sacrifice. No more needed. No more animals need to be killed. Paul talks about how in Jesus' death and resurrection, God was reconciling the world to himself, bringing peace to the world, bringing peace to us through Jesus. So if we ask, what is it that I need to do to find peace with God? What can I do to get peace with God? Well, the answer is nothing. God has done it. God has done everything that is needed. As we sang earlier, all I have needed, your hand has provided. And in a sense, we see that truth pictured right back in our story, don't we? Imagining Abraham and Isaac walking up Mount Moriah to that place. I feel there's so much in the conversation I would like to know if it was in the text. But perhaps it's the key words that have been recorded for us. You remember what Isaac said as they went up the mountain? "The fire and the wood are here, my father, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering?" God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. God himself will provide the lamb. But he, Jesus, has appeared for us once for all at the culmination of the ages to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself. Do you ever think, well, if I do X, Y, and Z, then perhaps God will... We need to know, don't we, that God has already done all that is necessary for us to have peace with him. He's done it. For us to know forgiveness, to be sure of God's love. And that's why he's the kind of God that it's good to trust. That's why we celebrate the faith of Abraham, because Abraham glimpsed something of that, that this was the sort of God that he trusted. And yes, when we understand that, we won't want to carry on living the way that we used to. Because this relationship of trust makes us new, doesn't it? Some of us will testify to that. And the New Testament takes up this imagery of sacrifice in a new way after the sacrifice of Jesus. It says that those who follow Jesus will want to live a sacrificial life of serving others, of offering ourselves as living sacrifices, as flesh and blood examples of God's peacemaking. And if the rituals are all over, why do we come to take bread and wine this morning? Perhaps because we need reminding time and time again of that peace we can have with God, we have with God through Christ. Perhaps because it grounds us, it awakens us, and we can celebrate it. Why is Abraham a great example of faith? Because he recognised something of the kind of God this is. A God who's acted in history to make peace with all things, reconcile all things to himself through the cross. The price has been paid because the lamb was provided. And I'll just leave you with this thought. How are you and I living in the light of that? Are we still trying to earn God's favour? Are we still burdened and looking for peace? Burned out with doing too many things we feel we need to do? Or are we trusting like Abraham that God himself has done everything that is needed?